Stomach Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, 1025-1063. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, live in the Hillside Medical Game Studios. Trevor Maddich in 30 minutes. His breakdown of the right tackle position, Ravens, Petit Ferrer. His thoughts on Malik Willis, Logan Woodside, Treylon Burks. His thoughts on the Titans coming up in 30 minutes. So, and I'm excited to hear about that, but I feel like yesterday we spent a lot of time talking about Malik Willis and Logan Woodside and this battle for the backup position that Mike Vrabel says is actually going on, which I don't think deep down inside is actually happening. But we spent all day talking about that. I want to push that to the side for a second. I want to talk about the quarterback situation for the Titans as a whole. The Titans are a Shanahan offensive system team. That is Mike Shanahan in Denver, Elway, Terrell Davis, that crew. Shanahan then later goes to the Washington team, and it's him, it's his kid as the offensive coordinator, it's Matt LaFleur, I believe, as the quarterback coach or the running back coach or one of those coaches, and now all of a sudden it's spawned where there's McVay, who was a coach on that staff, there's McVay, and then there's LaFleur, who's now in Green Bay, who brought the Shanahan system here. There's Arthur in Atlanta. There's Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. There's all these coaches around the league. Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, who was the quarterback coach last year for the Rams. There's all these coaches that have this system that is now becoming the popular system of the NFL. And the Titans run the Shanahan system, and Tannehill's career has been revived in the Shanahan system. Now, some teams do things differently, right? Like, the Rams are not going to turn around and hand it to Cam Akers 40 times in a game like the Titans are. But every single one of those teams has to run the ball. Every single one of those teams wants the ball out quick. Every single team wants everything on time, and every single one of those teams uses the tight ends. So that is kind of the commonalities between them. If Malik Willis is to become the starting quarterback of the Titans, I think what Titan fans don't realize, and maybe if they were to give Malik 3 years to learn, maybe Malik could eventually become a part of the Shanahan system. But I think more likely than not, most Titan fans are thinking that there's a possibility that Malik Willis could run next season as the starting quarterback, the Titans offense. And I don't think that's in the cards. I think that if the Titans were to commit to Malik Willis after this season, that they would have to run the Baltimore-style offense. And Bill Polian was on SiriusXM after Malik got drafted, and this is what he said about what the Titans' offense is going to be and why he's not going to play right now, but the role that he's got and where the Titans' offense is headed, in his opinion, anyways.
He causes problems for people when he runs the football. And Coach Vrabel, as a defensive coordinator, knows that. Running quarterbacks drive defensive coordinators crazy because they don't account for them in the basic scheme of the defense.
That's right.
So he has value. He won't be able to play quarterback right away, and he won't challenge Tannehill right away. But he will. Right. I think if they use him correctly, and I really believe they will, because I think they're going to be more of a slam-bang team than ever, they're gravitating more toward Baltimore every day. If they use him properly, his legs can win some games for them.
Okay, so you heard what Polian said right there. They're gravitating. Right now, they run the Shanahan system. And Polian says they're gravitating towards that, what was it, slam-bang Baltimore, mm-hmm. which is RPOs for Derrick Henry, which is what I assume they would do. RPOs,
heavy
throw
run.
It short to the tight end. Like, that's what they would do, which is the quarterback going to throw it? Is the quarterback going to keep it? Is the quarterback going to hand it to the back? You don't know. They don't know. I don't know. Let's go. And after watching Malik for 2 games, I am convinced that's the style of offense that Malik needs to play. And that the one thing that Malik might end up being better at than Lamar Jackson is throwing the ball down the field. Now, Lamar has a freaking cannon. Mm-hmm. I know that Lamar is not known for chucking it deep. He just has no accuracy when he tries to throw it over 25 yards. But he can throw it. He just isn't very accurate with it. Well, I think a lot of people would worry about Lamar throwing it deep and then the idea of it ending up with the other team.
Right.
With Malik, I think he may end up being more accurate with the deep ball than Lamar. But with all due respect to Malik, who is a great athlete, he's not Lamar Jackson.
No.
And so I do wonder if Titan fans understand this, that let's just say you've seen two games as a random Titan fan. You've seen two games out of Malik Willis, and you've decided that the talent is real. And let me say this. There is talent there with Malik Willis. And you've decided he's the heir apparent to Tannehill, and you've decided that next year you want Malik Willis to be the quarterback. The Titans have to completely overhaul the offense. Is Malik worth that? How will the Titans know if Malik is worth that? Again,
or
right
when
now,
will they know?
Right now, in a Malik Willis offense, Derrick Henry could fit into it. Hassan Haskins could fit into it. Austin Hooper could fit into it. Chig Okonkwo might be able to fit into it.
What about Hooper makes him more of a fit than Chig?
Because Hooper is a consistent ball comes out quick, catch the ball short, run with it kind of guy. Burks could fit into it, and that's it. So, like Kyle Phillips, no need for him if you're going to be Baltimore. No need for Kyle Phillips. Those, you know, timing routes with Robert Woods, those aren't going to work. Like, Lamar's not throwing the ball to Robert Woods. The offensive line, I couldn't tell you who fits or who doesn't in a Baltimore-style offense. But it's a complete overhaul of the offense right now if they choose to go the route with Malik Willis. And I don't know if Titan fans know that. And so Polian seems convinced that the Titans are trending towards running a Baltimore offense anyway. I'm not sure I buy that, but I don't know if that Baltimore offense wins Super Bowls. And on top of it, I don't know that I don't like, I like Lamar and I fear Lamar when my team has to play Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Lamar Jackson, the style that he plays, I don't know if that can win a Super Bowl. And I don't know if I look at Malik, and it's obviously way too early to decide on that right now. I don't know if I look at Malik and say, hey, this talent has proven to be so special already that it's time to just rip it up, put him next year, put him in there, and let him roll with it. And either it works or it doesn't. But if it doesn't work, we're probably all getting fired.
And that's what I was going to say is the alternative of it working out. Okay, well, now you just traded away really solid, good players because it just didn't fit into this offense.
Blew up your entire offense.
Blew up your entire team. I guess your entire offense. Your defense is untouched. Where do you go from there? Do you go try and find another quarterback, another RPO type of quarterback, a very talented running quarterback like Malik Willis and try and fit him into that offense?
Or do you go back to the Shanahan system
and
try to go
from there? Completely blow up what you just blew up. And I don't know the answer to that question.
So, again, if you're going to go, if you're the Titans,
you're going to
make the decision that you're going to completely redo it from Malik, if this doesn't work out, it doesn't matter. You don't get to make that choice.
No, you don't.
If it doesn't work out, you get fired. So there is no...
Are you willing to completely blow up the offense for a third round?
That's not the question for me, because I am telling you right now that first of all, the answer has to be undecided, because they won't know until the end of the year if they're going to commit to Malik or at what level are they going to commit to Malik. So they could view Malik as a backup, that they could view Malik as the potential backup next season to Tannehill or the long-term backup for this organization, like Davis Webb or Mason Rudolph or these other third-round picks. Or they could view Malik as the heir apparent to Tannehill at quarterback. And I don't know what they view it as, but I do think there are a lot of fans out there that watch Malik play and we're like, oh, we got to get Malik out there. And I'm like, I hear you. But right now, unless Malik spends way more time on the bench and develops way, way, way more, it's going to require a complete overhaul of what they do. And that's a big decision to make. The decision was made for Baltimore when they took Lamar in the first round and then had a first-round pick invested in Jackson. The decision was made when they made the move from Flacco to Lamar, and Lamar got him into the playoffs. And it was, okay, this is the future of our team. Because when they took Lamar, they didn't know if it was going to work out. Nobody knew. That's why he went with the 32nd pick. That's why Josh Rosen went ahead of him. But once they made the move from Flacco to Lamar, I believe Flacco got hurt for a couple games. Lamar came in and it was like, nope, we're staying with Lamar. When they made the move from Flacco to Lamar, Lamar won so many games that at that point it was like, okay, you know what? Whatever it is, it's Lamar's team. Greg Roman, you're in. Let's go. Put in the Lamar offense. And they've put in an offense for Lamar and they've won a lot of games because of it. I don't think the Titans are going to find themselves in a similar situation because I don't think Malik's going to be the backup here this year. But if Malik, if the team ever does decide to go forward with Malik, then it is a new offense, in my opinion, that they have to put in. It is kind of a Michael Vick or Lamar Jackson type offense. The one thing I want to caution everybody on is I like Malik. Malik has talent, but he doesn't have Michael Vick's talent. He doesn't have Lamar Jackson's talent. Those are elite athletes playing quarterback. And Malik is a good athlete, but he's not Lamar Jackson. I mean, Lamar Jackson single-handedly carried college football for 2 years. Michael Vick, same. Michael Vick took Virginia Tech to the national championship game. And so I'm not knocking Malik, but it's just the reality of if you think Malik will be that good, then this is what you have to do for Malik. And I don't know if the fans know that. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Get your thoughts in there. D. Mace yesterday was talking about Malik and had a point that I think people didn't want to hear from me, but I think maybe people will want to hear it from Derek, and he sums it up perfectly as someone who's been there and done that. We'll get to that next. And, of course, your phones, 615-737-1025, Stillman & Company, 1025-1063, The Game.
And I said it on the night of the draft is when the third round started, I said, you got to take these quarterbacks. It's too good a value now because even if they only become a number two, they're at minimum salaries, and that just helps your entire team. And so happy for Malik to start off like that.
That was Mark Dominic, SiriusXM NFL Radio, but also former NFL general manager saying, hey, once you get to the third round, the Titans got to make a move on Malik because even if only he becomes a backup, still good value for a number two. And I'm sure Titan fans don't want to hear that because they see the arm, they see the athleticism, and they think what that means he could be. Now, Derek was on the midday show yesterday, and he was talking about where Malik is. And I've said that I think Logan is the backup or one of these other Sean Mannion or Kellen Mond or one of these other guys is going to be the backup. Derek on the midday show yesterday.
Here's the dilemma that the Titans are in is, you know, Willis, I don't think is ready. If he's the backup quarterback, if Ryan Tannehill goes down week two, week three, I don't think Willis is ready to then step in.
Yeah. Let's just say for two games or three games,
I still don't think he's ready to step in.
I don't think so either.
Now you got to make a decision. If he's not ready, and I'm not saying he won't be ready eventually, but if they had to go and say, hey, listen, this is what our situation is. We need our backup quarterback, and we're going to not have Ryan Tannehill for three games, and these are critical three games. Malik Willis is not our backup. He can't be. He's not ready to be the backup. You're setting this guy up for failure unless you're going to run the ball 40 times and throw it 15 and make it to where it's a one-read game or a two-read game for him, then, yes, you can kind of, you know, you can help him out in that aspect. But defenses are going to force you. If he is the quarterback, defenses are going to force you to do other things.
And I think that's how the Titans feel. That is, look, he's not ready. Not even to be the backup. That's my gut on it. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Do you have a thought or do you want to go to the phones?
To the phones.
James is up next. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead, James.
You know, it's funny. It's almost like the Emperor's New Clothes with the national media and some of the Titans fans. I mean, Malik is raw at best, and he's missing. He's not even throwing to wide open wide receivers. And when he does scramble from the shotgun, he's not converting third and fourth downs. When Lamar Jackson was a rookie in the preseason, you saw his ability to be elusive in short spaces.
In fairness, I don't know what you're talking about with the elusiveness, but in the preseason for Lamar, he was freaking terrible that year. Just trying to.
I don't remember that. You're probably right. It's too far back, but. You and I both know that Malik is not making first downs on third and fourth downs. He's not escaping to those conversions. I don't see it what I was seeing in college, which means that what tells me is he can only be elusive in RPOs, and that's just not feasible in the NFL. You can't run 100% RPOs out of the NFL. It's not feasible.
So I think you bring up a good point. Yep, thank you for your call, James. I think you bring up a good point. Here is Malik in, like, legitimate passing situations. Third and eight on his first drive. Tampa drops 7 in coverage. He has plenty of time. He gets one rusher that kind of breaks the pocket, and he rushes and gets 6 yards on third and eight. Well, all their defenders are lined up at the sticks, so he's never going to be able to break it for a first down. I mean, maybe once in a while he'll break a tackle or two, but not to the point that if they're dropping 7 at the marker, that he's going to be able to run past all 7 guys at one time. Third and long on his second drive, he threw it short of Phillips. Phillips was open. I don't know who screwed up on that. Vrabel says he doesn't know either. Third down. Okay, here's another one. Third down and long, he rolls to the right on his third series, and he's forced out of the pocket because Carl Nassib blows right past Dylan Raidens, which is of no surprise to anyone. But he's got Hooper wide open over the middle, and instead of turning around and dropping it off to Hooper to run for the first down, he tries to throw the ball, I believe, to Torrey Carter, and he completes it, but they don't get enough for a first down, so then they have to punt. His fourth drive is on a 3rd and 12. He ran out of bounds. Oh, that was when he was running backwards out of pressure, and he just ran out of bounds and kind of took a sack, which, throw it away. Raiden's got a false start, too, that led to that, which is, don't even get me started on that. His fifth drive, I'm trying to see if there's any of these, like, third downs where Malik made some kind of big play. On third down, he rolled out, completed it to 18, so I guess that picked up a first down. And then on 3rd and 14, he had plenty of time, felt the pressure. He threw the ball into the end zone, incomplete, but he should have thrown it out of the back of the end zone. So to the caller's point, it wasn't like Malik was converting a lot of third downs out there. So that's not a good sign.
That was what I noticed, especially in the first quarter. It felt like it was 3 and out after 3 and out after 3 and out. And it was, I mean, he's not ready. He is not ready. And it's okay. And he's not ready to run in this offense right now. He's not Ryan Tannehill.
He's not ready to play in the
NFL. He can't fill in if Ryan Tannehill gets injured.
There's not a team in the league.
He can't run that offense.
He's not ready. There's not a team in the league where he's ready to get on the field and play. And he's just not ready. He's just not good enough, and he's not ready yet. And that word yet is important. I don't know if he'll ever be good enough or be ready, but he's not there yet. Manny is up next. Thank you for calling. What's up, Manny?
Yes, this is Manny Lopez, first-time call, long-time
cool.
listener. Y'all were talking about how Malik would not be good in those other types of offenses. What type of offense does Steve McNair run, and do you think that would he be able to run that kind of offense?
So it's funny you say this. Steve McNair. Now, I don't know what offense. I forget who the offensive coordinator was when they drafted McNair. His name escapes me. And I have no idea what offense he ran. And Les Steckel, I mean, even though I absolutely adore Les Steckel, like, I don't know what offensive system. I'm guessing that Les Steckel probably ran the early Shanahan stuff. But I'm not sure about that. And I don't want to say that he did or didn't. I don't know. But he was on Shanahan's coaching staff as the tight ends coach in Denver.
Jerry Rome was the OC in
Jerry
95.
Rome, there it is. Yeah. So, again, Les Steckel had been the head coach in Minnesota, and he had been an offensive coordinator in the league, and I believe he was the tight ends coach in Denver under Shanahan. And Heimerdinger, you know, the offense that Steve McNair won the MVP with, Heimerdinger came from the Shanahan system because he was with Shanahan in Denver. But I think it was kind of a different, less modern Shanahan system, but it was a run the ball with Eddie George all the time. And then in the middle of the 2001 season, the Titans' entire identity shifted. Eddie George had the turf toe injury that he really never got over, and he was never the same back again. And they had kind of Frank Wycheck got older, and they had the emergence of Derek Mason as a number one wide receiver, followed by Drew Bennett and Justin McCarron's, and that kind of allowed McNair to become more of a passer first, and they became a pass-first team. But do I think McNair could fit into this system? Yeah.
And it's just in Pro Football Reference under the 1998 Oilers Titans page. Mm-hmm. Offensive scheme, it just says balanced.
Yeah.
So I don't really.
Well, and in 1998, the scheme was Eddie
and defensive alignment 4-3.
Well, they always so ran. They always ran that 4-3.
It wasn't. It's not quite as system-y as it is, I guess, now.
Yeah, it's
unless
more,
it was straight run and shoot.
It's
right?
It's more like coaches wanting to be, you know, the stars as much as anything. My system, my team, my everything. But to answer the caller's question, I do believe that Steve McNair could play this system because ball comes out quick. Now, McNair wasn't the most accurate passer. Now, he had some just bombs that were beauties. He was not the most accurate passer. He was not, you know, zip, 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 zip. But I do think that play
action pass. But is
this offense
now? Zip, 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 zip?
That's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's supposed to be. Like when Tannehill was cooking in 2019, it was ball out, ball out, ball out, ball out. And then they would trick teams and they'd have guys, you know, they'd run the offense to one side and then they would turn over to the other side and there's Jonnu Smith all by himself. And they would do things like that. But yeah, this is supposed to be ball comes out. This is supposed to be this offense. I think to give people an idea of what this offense at its best is, Jared Goff with Todd Gurley on the Rams, in which run, 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 zip, zip, run, zip, run. High volumes at the sticks, guys like Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and not one guy is totally responsible for everything, but everybody plays a role. And people forget, Jared Goff had like a laser beam arm for those first couple of seasons with McVay. And what I heard happened was apparently Matt LaFleur for the first year was kind of the buffer between McVay and Goff. So if McVay would get frustrated with Goff, he'd take it out on LaFleur, and then LaFleur would kind of massage in the message to Goff. Uh-huh. And then Zach Taylor did that the next year, and then Zach Taylor went to Cincinnati, and they didn't replace Zach Taylor.
They didn't have that middleman.
And so then McVay would take out his frustrations on Goff, and Goff would be like, screw you, and that was how they kind of got the relationship that they had.
Well, do they have a new guy now, or do McVay and Stafford just have an okay relationship?
Well, they had
okay
O'Connell.
Relationship?
They had O'Connell last year. Now, I believe, if I'm right about this, they hired the offensive coordinator at Kentucky, I think, to be their guy, Liam Cohen. I think they hired him.
Yes, they did.
To be their guy this year.
They did.
And so Rich Scangarello, who was the quarterback coach in San Francisco,
there you go,
is now the offensive coordinator at Kentucky because they want to run
the Shanahan system.
615-737-1025. Trevor Maddich, we've been talking about Dylan Raidens and Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, and I have said that the right tackle position is keeping me up at night, that I am worried, truly, truly worried. Should I be? What does Trevor think? We will get Trevor Maddich's thoughts on that next. 615-737-1025. And if you're okay with doing this, Ian, can we do this now or do you want to wait?
Go for it.
All right. Let's give away a pair of tickets to go see the Lumineers at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, September 1st. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you are going to see the Lumineers at Bridgestone Arena on Thursday, September 1st. I have told everybody that I am worried about the Titans' offensive line. I don't think I need to tell everybody this. It's really not about me. I think everybody is worried about the Titans' offensive line. But count me as number one. As I started the show off saying today, I am literally, first thing I woke up thinking about this morning is, oh my God, what are they going to do at right tackle? That's the first thing I thought. And that's why we have our experts on the program. Trevor Maddich, of course, ESPN college football analyst, but he watched the Titans-Bucks game. Trev, I am worried about the right tackle position for the 2022 Tennessee Titans. I think they're solid across the board outside of right tackle. I think that they've got a great coach. I think their defense is going to be good this year. I think Tannehill looks sharper in camp. But oh, am I worried about right tackle. Please make me feel better about the right tackle position. Trevor, your analysis after the Buccaneers game.
My analysis is I am not going to make you feel better about the right tackle position.
Oh, no.
This is the wrong time for the NFL to be going with three preseason games instead of four, because this team needs that fourth preseason game, both to get Malik Willis more work and to get whoever's going to be starting at right tackle more work, assuming that that guy's on the roster right now. I don't know that he is, and keep this in mind, too, that if they bring in somebody off of somebody else's cuts, that's the guy who couldn't even make their team at the fourth tackle position. You got a back. You got two starters at tackle. You're likely to have two guys backing them up, right? That's four tackles that most teams will carry. And then they're going to cut everybody else. So the guy that may be starting for Tennessee this year may be the fifth tackle that somebody else cut off of their roster. Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you what, there was absolutely nothing in the performance of either young guy, Radens or Petit Frere, that gave you much confidence that you're going to have a solid right tackle after the Buccaneers game.
Okay, it looks like that they're probably moving Dylan Radens off the right tackle spot, so we'll get to him in a second. What did you think of how the Petit Frere played on Saturday? I know they played him some at left tackle and some at right tackle. He started with the ones at right tackle. What did you make of his performance?
You know, I thought he was better at right tackle than he is at left right now, by the way. And I thought he was a lot better than Radens. He was able to stay in front of guys and not get tossed around better than Radens. And when I say get tossed around, that's important because, you know, Radens played in North Dakota State in the FCS. He didn't really face a whole lot of defenders that had a whole lot of power, whereas Nicholas Petit Frere played at Ohio State in the Big Ten. And he faced guys every week that had a lot of power, in addition to a lot of guys that were future NFL guys. So he's used to the physicality of somebody that can actually throw you places. And he wasn't getting thrown around. So I think that's good. He still needs to improve his functional strength. His part of the problem at Ohio State that he had to work through getting up to this league was being a little bit soft on the edges, meaning if a rusher was going to do a power move through either shoulder of him, he tended to get turned a little bit, right? But he seems to be in the first two preseason games a little bit better at that, at the right tackle position. I think they want somebody else to start at right tackle so he can be a swing tackle because he played both sides in college. But I think that in the first two preseason games at that one position at right tackle, he showed enough. This is Nicholas Petit Frere. He showed enough to make you think that he can continue to improve and be a contributor.
If Mike Vrabel told you, Trevor, I am going to put Nicholas Petit Frere at right tackle, I'm going to let him learn on the job, and we've got Von Miller in week two and Max Crosby or Chandler Jones with the Raiders in week three, what would you say to Mike Vrabel?
Run the ball. Run the ball, because he'd still be in trouble over there against those guys. Really, really, you know, veteran NFL tackles have trouble against those guys. But because of the nature of this offense and pounding it downhill, really the best way to slow down a pass rusher is to run the ball right at him. Mm-hmm. And Petit Frere is a guy that can swallow up one of those pass rushers that needs to hold his gap. I mean, when you're running the ball at a guy like that, he can't run around the block because he'll end up creating a hole just because he ran around the block. And so you got to take on the blocker, so that helps. Radens, same way, by the way, because he as a run blocker, shows more promise than he does as a pass blocker. But if it's Petit Frere, this is your question, to be the starter and have to face those guys early in the season, then, you know, if the running game doesn't work, they're in a whole lot of trouble because then they will have to take somebody out of the pass pattern. They'll have to put a tight end over there. They'll have to chip. They'll have to do something to give him support. And that hurts the rest of the passing game. So really, the status and the productivity of the right tackle position, no matter who's there, one of the two young guys on the roster now or somebody else, is really going to depend a lot about how well they run the ball to the right.
Trevor Maddich is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, your thoughts on Dylan Radens' performance?
Oh, my gosh. Overall, you know, Malik Willis, certainly in the first half, didn't have any time to throw. And even Logan Woodside, of course, that was a different group of people and everything else, didn't have time either. But overall, that offensive line just got shredded in pass protection. And when you watch individually Dylan Radens, in this game, you can make a case that he did a little bit better because there were fewer times when he just whiffed. He whiffed a couple of times. One of them was turned into one of Malik Willis's best throws, where Willis had pressure. He stepped up and threw the ball kind of sidearm on a rope and completed the pass. It was a really nice, I think it was to Dez. It was a really nice throw. But one of the reasons he had to do that was because Raiden's let his guy come inside and just blasted right past him. It was just awful. But even when he was in front of guys, unlike Petit Frere, who seemed to hold his own physically, Raiden's, even when he seems to win a pass protection rep, gets tossed around, and he's hanging on for dear life. It's like a little bitty dog grabs onto a much bigger animal and holds on while that animal's, you know, like a bulldog, say, grabs onto a bull, and the bull's just flopping him every which way. Well, you know, in the NFL, you just can't be doing that, because when you get tossed around like Ravens tends to, you're using 100% of your capability physically just to not get pushed back on roller skates, and that opens the door for all kinds of moves from the better NFL pass rushers. And so even when Raiden's won, he still would put on a performance getting tossed around that good pass rushers are going to see on tape, and they're going to find 16 different ways to get all the way past him and get to the quarterback. So I just was... It's not that he's a young guy who's still learning. It's that he hasn't shown the physical power to be able to hold up at that position while he learns.
Trev, I think sometimes there's a difference between had a bad game and not a good player. And unfortunately, just my opinion, I think Dylan Raiden's is proving to be in the latter category.
Well, I agree with you. That's the direction that he's heading. Now, last year, in some ways, it was unfair to fully judge it. Because the year before he got drafted, North Dakota State only played one game because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So he missed a full season, basically. He missed all the strength and conditioning that he would have had. He comes into the NFL, and he physically was not ready to compete. He just wasn't. But now he's had over a year of NFL strength and conditioning. He's had OTAs. He's had all those different things. Now we should be able to see what kind of player he is. And so far, he hasn't shown the ability to hold up. And once again, you got to be really careful as you evaluate him to not just say, well, did his guy get to the quarterback or did he not get to the quarterback? That's not enough, because better pass rushers that he'll face, and he's not facing good pass rushers right now. The better pass rushers that he faced will absolutely abuse him if he blocks the way he blocks the lesser pass rushers that he's been facing. And that was a problem that he had in 2019 at North Dakota State, where he would protect the passer, Trey Lance, who's in San Francisco right now, he'd protect the passer, but he would end up going into chase mode and just pushing the guy past him way too often, and that's at the FCS level. At that level, you should be squared up in front of the guy, strike him, shock him, and stone him. And Raiden's didn't do that as much as he should have at the FCS level, so he hasn't ever shown the ability. It's like a marriage, right? Mm-hmm. If you get married too soon and, you know, you're not married too soon. Let's say that you get married, you had a great courtship, you had a great couple of years, and then as a young married couple, and then things start to go south. You can always look back and say, you know what, it was great. Let's get back to where it was, because we know we can be that couple. But if you had a tempestuous relationship before you got married, and it just got worse after you got married, and then a couple of years in, you can't really look back and say, yeah, let's get back to where we were. And that's kind of the way that Dylan Raiden's is right now. It's hard to find anything that you can look back to and say, he can get back to that guy in college, and that would be good enough. And it's hard to say that he's heading in a direction that is anything other than can't play.
Trevor Maddich is with us. What do you make of Mike Vrabel yesterday moving him to guard and having him play as the backup left guard? Vrabel was asked about yesterday just trying to work on everybody's versatility. So that may be a nice way of saying things. What do you make of Vrabel after the Tampa Bay game moving Raiden's off the tackle position?
Well, it's partly because they do have a shortage of bodies in there at guard. Jamarco Jones and Nate Davis have been dinged up, and so you can make that excuse, but to me it kind of rings like an excuse to make the fans not pick on Raiden's too much, to say, yeah, well, they moved him in there, they want to get some versatility, they want to to, you know, give those other guys a physical break because they're short of guards, all that stuff, right? But I don't think that's the real reason. I think the real reason is they need to get more reps to Petit Frere and they right tackle, and they don't think that Dylan Radins can play right tackle. So can he play guard? I don't think he can play that either, because to be a guard, the first thing you have to do in pass protection is drop anchor. If a defensive tackle can push you back into the quarterback's face, everything breaks down. And when you look at Tom Brady, for example, whenever Brady would have trouble against defenses, it almost always started with some defensive tackle, a la Aaron Donald or somebody, Jeffrey Simmons, DeNico Autry, some guy that can kick down inside and push the guard back into the face of the quarterback. That's when things completely break down. Because if you're coming around the edge, the quarterback can step up if the guard can drop anchor in there and give him some space. If the guard can't drop anchor, then the guy coming around the edge is going to knock the ball out of the quarterback's hands. And I haven't seen from Dylan Radins that he can drop anchor at guard against better defensive tackles. So I'm wondering where he's going to play.
Trevor Maddich is with us, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Coming up next, Trev's thoughts on Malik Willis, the backup quarterback battle, and where's Treylon Burks been? We'll get Trev's thoughts on that coming up next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Trevor Maddich is with us, as always, on a Tuesday, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trev, I'm going to open it up for you right now. The backup quarterback debate, Woodside versus Willis. What do you make of it through two preseason games?
Right now, if I had to pick one, if I just dropped in from Mars, I would say Willis.
Really?
If you didn't drop in from Mars, you'd know that Woodside is the guy that knows the system, the coaches trust him, but you know he's not a playmaker. And if you dropped in from Mars, what you would see is that Willis would be pressured, and he's far more explosive and dynamic when he breaks out and has a chance to make something happen with his legs, not just gain yards on the ground, but also to break out and get into some space out of the pocket on the scramble and have a chance to hit somebody downfield, things that Woodside just can't do. And Woodside has some real bad interceptions. So far, Willis doesn't have any interceptions in the preseason at all, and although he could have. But Woodside has some pretty bad ones. He threw a pretty bad one against the Buccaneers, where he had a guy running down the left sideline. All he has to do is loft the ball up and over him, drop it on the boundary. There was an alley out there. But instead, he threw the ball short and inside where the defender was. It was just a terrible throw. It was just awful. And so the only way that Woodside can be effective as a backup is that he's got to enlist and enable the capabilities of the players around him better than the playmaking ability of Willis as an individual running around. That means he's got to distribute the ball effectively, not turn it over, really empower everybody else. And really this preseason, in two preseason games, he has not shown the ability to do that in a way that is bigger than Willis's ability to run around and make plays when things break down. And things have broken down badly, because the offensive line overall has been so wildly inconsistent, if not inadequate. And in that kind of a situation, the quarterback you need is the one that can run.
Trevor, what do you make of Malik's development? Are you encouraged or discouraged so far?
I'm encouraged, but I agree with you guys that he's not ready. I mean, he hasn't faced a defensive coordinator that's been game planning for him yet. And yet he still has made plenty of mistakes. But we talked about the first preseason game against the Ravens and the baseline that he set. Did some good things, made some mistakes. Did some, you know, he took a sack with less than 30 seconds to go when he should have thrown the ball away. Things like that. He would look to run when he had plenty of time to throw. He'd pull it down and run anyway, instead of continuing to look downfield, using the time that he did have, and sometimes it was a lot of time, he would just take off and go. So what happened in this game? Well, in this game, the very first play was a crossing route over the middle, and he hit it. It was a decisive throw, drop, set, throw. It was great. Well, he missed that in the first preseason game. It was an inaccurate throw. It was incomplete. So it was a good confidence play that wasn't a wide receiver screen behind the line, you know? And then in this game, he was more decisive. He knew where to look, at least for his first read, more often, And then at the back of his drop, set, throw, he would get that thing out from time to time. Wasn't always the most accurate throw, but it was more decisive. And when he took off to run, often he kept his eyes downfield longer and then ran when he had to. So that was an improvement from last week. And then the touchdown pass, I thought, was the biggest improvement of all. I mean, there's 30 seconds to go in the half. He had a good pocket, so he stayed there. You know, in the first preseason game against the Ravens, he'd have a good pocket, and he'd start drifting into where pass rushers were being blocked and create all kinds of unnecessary drama. So in this one, he had a good pocket, so he stayed in the pocket. He looked to his left. Finally, he saw Chigakonkwo coming across on the crossing route in the end zone, and he drilled it, and it was a rope, and Okonkwo caught it, and it was a touchdown pass. And the thing about that is that it moved off of the baseline set the week before, where he would freak out in the pocket and just start moving around for no apparent reason. This time he didn't have to move, so he didn't. And he was able to allow the pass pattern to develop in front of him. That's an improvement. Is he ready yet? No. But the thing we need to see from him is the thing that we're not seeing from Raiders, which is, okay, here's what happened last week. Now, this week, did you get better? In the case of Willis, it's yes. In the case of Raiders, it's no, in my opinion. Now, what happens next week, right? And this is what we need to see from Willis. I don't think it's fair to, you know, judge him based on whether he's ready to be a starting NFL quarterback in this system right now, especially based on the system he ran in college, which did not require him to know anything about the defense except where one guy was standing. Basically, if he's there, you run there. If he's here, you run over the other way, right? That's basically the system that he ran in college. So he's not ready to apply an NFL playbook yet. But in his first to second opportunity in game action, he got better. And that's how I judge him.
Trevor Maddox is with us here on the program, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. Trevor, should we be concerned that Treylon Burks, through two preseason games, has done nothing?
No, because in a lot of ways, you can make the same case about Burks. In other words, he hasn't done much from a standpoint of receiving, but then again, Tannehill's not throwing him the ball. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you would know better than me because you go to practice every week, but my understanding is that, that Tannehill's finding him a lot more often in practice successfully than Willis or Woodside was able to find him in the games. I mean, do you find that to be true?
Sure.
I mean,
he flashes some. You know, he dominated the first day, and he's had some good catches and some good moments, but he hasn't consistently stood out.
Yeah. And so he, you know, the coaches praised him for blocking, which is good. You know, apparently he got better at some of the little things that did not include having the ball in his hand in this game. Okay, so that's good.
I guess the question, Trevor, is how much of it is the fact that the two quarterbacks stink as compared to, is Burks not going to be an impact player because they need him to be an impact player?
Yeah, and that's the right question. And right now I don't know. From a standpoint of being an impact player, that means catching the ball in traffic, making the guy miss or breaking a tackle, and then getting more than there should be there. That's why they drafted him. He's got that big body, that physicality, and so far he hasn't shown that. The one big obvious opportunity that he had was against the Ravens, where the ball was thrown down to the goal line a little bit inside, and he kind of fought a little bit with a defender for the ball, but it didn't look like he was fighting hard. It didn't look like he used his physical capabilities to go in there and go through that defender and take that ball away from him, breaking the defender's teeth on the way out and all 10 of his fingers and both of his arms, because Burks is that much bigger and stronger and he's going to take that thing away. That's the attitude that I wanted to see on that play. And he didn't show that attitude. So until he shows it in a game, I'm going to assume that he's not going to be that impact player. I hate to say that. But so far we've had two games where he's had some opportunities to go up and take the ball away from somebody, and he hasn't done it.
Yeah. Trev, John Robinson says to you, you know as much football as anybody out there. Who or what should I do with my backup quarterback spot? Woodside, Willis, or get one of these guys that runs the Shanahan system that's going to get released?
I'm keeping Woodside. with the thought that he's only going to be here for another year or so on the hope that Willis can continue to grow. I would have, because I didn't drop in from Mars, I would say Woodside would be the backup. Willis would be the third guy, but I would have packages ready for Willis for games where the Titans are in firm control that Willis can go in and get some actual regular season game action in. Woodside, no. But I put Willis in and give him three or four plays to run and kind of get him ready. The reason for that is that in the NFL, more games are lost than they are won. Mm-hmm. And you're more likely to have a rookie quarterback like Willis make the big mistake than you will Woodside, theoretically, although Woodside's been the one that's made the big mistake in the preseason so far, not Willis in terms of turnovers. But I would still trust early in the season Woodside to be my number two, and I could always flip him if Willis does a great job with the limited packages that he gets and the limited times that he's able to play.
Trevor Maddich, as always, presented by Houston Clinic Orthopedics. Trevor, great stuff. Always good to talk to you. We'll have college football games that we're going to have to talk about next week. But great breakdown, as always. Appreciate you, Trev.
Thanks, Jared.
Yep, Trevor Maddich joining us on the program, as always. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little depressed.
Did you go into this thinking that you'd feel better?
I'm a little depressed. We will talk about my depression after what Trevor had to say, because I trust Trevor's opinion, and what Trevor said about the offensive line, we will discuss next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.